And it's very nice to be settling into the rains retreat here. Such a wonderful group of people, all good-hearted people, come here to practice the Dhamma and participating in these gentle and timeless rhythms of the monastic life, meditation and meal time and chores when they have to be done, and coming together for meetings to discuss Dhamma and so on. The life in the monastery is peaceful, it's reassuring. It's like a refuge. We don't have to compete. We don't have to prove ourselves. We don't have to be anything. Just to be present, just to be peaceful. The simplest and easiest thing in the world. Just be present. Just be peaceful. When everything falls away, when all our concerns fade, then our life becomes just this. You know, none of us asked to be born. Well, okay, maybe some of us did, maybe we made some aspiration in our past lives or whatever. But mostly these things happen just according to nature. There we are, just born. I wonder if anyone here has a memory of that, what our earliest memory is. It's very hard to say. When I cast my mind back, I have what seemed to me some very early memories of the first home my family lived in when we were just a couple of years we were there. And I definitely remember the second house we were in, but the first house, I have some vague memories, but I'm not sure if they're just things I've constructed or whether they have any real reality to them. But there we were, little babies. Very soft, very tender, very raw bundle of nerves, experiencing the world for the first time, trying to make sense of this chaos of experience. And still so much potential, so many things that we can be, so many possibilities. And we grow up and we have all these dreams and fantasies. Remember when you're children how rich the imaginary life is. All the discoveries that we make, the friends that we make, the experiences, the pain, the sickness, all of those things shaping who we're going to become. And we have some kind of imagination, some kind of fantasy of who we're going to be, creating a bhava, an existence for ourselves in the future. I wanted to be a pilot. That was my dream for many years, until my mum told me because I was colorblind I couldn't be a pilot. So that blew that one out of the water. And isn't it amazing how we can dream so very much, and yet so often our lives settle and become in courses that we never could have predicted, and so often in courses that we never would have wanted. How many times do the passion and the fire of youthful love then get turned into the grey routine of a loveless marriage? How often does the excitement of learning a new skill or a new trade then get turned into the drudgery of day in, day out, 9-to-5 work? How often does the excitement of having children get turned into the ordinary everyday work and effort and strain that it takes to bring up a child? And if we look at the world as it's constructed and sold to us. The thing that's so striking is the effort and the energy that it takes to create this this appearance, this shiny appearance. Just before the talk, Bhattacharya was telling us a very terrible story of a girl who was locked in a cage by her parents and was very happy when Dad bought her a shiny new chain to lock her up with. That was her treat, to have a new chain. And I joked, well, that's like everything else in samsara. A shiny new iPod. This is a new chain to keep you locked in samsara. It's not a new image. In the Melinda Panha, you see the King Melinda uses the imagery. He says, I'm like a lion in a golden cage. That was how he felt, trapped in his worldly existence as a ruler. Like a lion in a golden cage. So at each step in our life, every juncture, we are faced with choices. Do we turn left or do we turn right? What our life becomes is the accumulation of these choices. Each choice sending us down a pathway, closing us off to the myriad possibilities on other pathways, and opening up the possibilities on this path. Every time we make a choice, a million worlds die. A million possibilities disappear. And this is, at its heart, this is why making decisions is always stressful. Because in one's heart there's always a mourning for the thousand realities that have disappeared, and the fear that the reality that remains is not the right one. And so even though we have tendencies, we have conditioning, we have personalities, we have patterns of behavior, but it's still true that each time we make a choice, that this is a free choice. It's influenced by the past, but it's not fixed by it. So as we move through our lives, that little person, that little baby, who we still hold within us, is subject to the shocks, the stresses, the difficulties, as well as the joys, the possibilities, the achievements. And with each choice decides who one will be. The Buddha said that whereas animals are described according to their birth, a cow or a goat or a chicken, whereas a human is defined according to what they do, a farmer, a banker, a soldier. And what we do is a consequence of our choices, our acts, our karma. We make that karma, we make that choice. And that becomes who we are. Now that we've decided to come to a monastery, stay in practice for the rains retreat, that too is another kind of choice. And by making this choice, we've let a thousand other possible worlds wither and die. And this world, this possible world, is given life, is privileged over all the others. And everything that we've done up to this point Every choice that we've made, every step on the journey has led us here, unerringly, as if it had been mapped out in advance. We are, all of us, precisely here, precisely now. And this chain of choices, conditions, causes, happenstance, of incomprehensible and irreducible complexity, has all led to this one very simple, very plain reality. And all of that has gone. Everything we've done in our life is finished. Every meal has been eaten. Every song is over. All that is real is what is happening here. And the future is nothing more than these vast arrays of millions of possible worlds, all like ghosts. None of them is real, none of them is true. And they only become real because of the choices that we make in the here and now. And all those dreams, those fantasies that we have when we're young, as they become fulfilled or trashed, perverted, corrupted, or whatever, we learn through this experience the difference between this kind of image and the reality of things. And just like the difference between, say, advertising and the reality of things, the effort that marketing has to go to convince us that something is worthwhile. In the same way, these dreams, these fantasies that we have, are never the same as reality. Often the reality might be less, but not always. Maybe sometimes we do realize our dreams. Or maybe sometimes we get even more than we've dreamt of. But whatever, the reality is not the same as the dream. Whatever we've dreamed of, whatever that may be, there's always something extra. The reality, the actual experience, has an extra quality that no dream or fantasy can ever share. It has a concreteness to it, finality to it. It is, in a way that's quite irrefutable and immutable. So having made this choice to be here in the monastery, the culmination of so many choices in our lives, this choice, be here, that's a choice which is quite distinct. Quite a different kind of thing. And while in some ways monastic life and the monastic choice, whether here as an ordained or as a lay person, in some ways it is similar to the kinds of choices we make outside, in that, well, we make the choice and then we have certain clothes to wear or certain forms to conform to, or certain kinds of language to use, or certain kinds of duties to be done, and so on, in the same way that any other job would have similar kinds of things. The difference being that none of those things is the essence. If I'm a mechanic, then the essence of what I'm doing is fixing cars. Everything else is inessential. If I'm a doctor, the essence is treating illness. Everything else is inessential. If I'm an accountant, my job is making the numbers add up, and everything else is inessential. as a monastic, the essential is not any of these externals, not any of the things on the outside. And this is the point of one of the Buddha's great teachings in the Dhammapada, is that we should not mistake the essential for the inessential. And of course it's something that we find all the time in Buddhism, that those things which are external, people mistake as being something important. And so it's not the books, and it's not the teachings, and it's not the rituals, and it's not the places, and it's not the forms, and it's not the robes, and it's not the haircut, and it's not any of those things. If it's not any of those things, then what is it? Well, I guess it's what's left when you take all those things away. It's that thing that we come closest to when we're alone in our kuti or our room, quiet, with our eyes closed, looking into our mind, and not wanting anything, not trying to be anything, not thinking of yourself as anything, just content, just being, just present. And I don't really know if it's possible to talk about cultivating such a thing. Well, I guess it is. But our job here in the monastery is to cultivate that presence, to be. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Isn't that a wonderful thing that we can be so very real? That we step out of all of those fantasies. We step out of the wanting of the identity, of the sense of self. We step out of defining ourselves in terms of others or in terms of our own desires. And just be in this refuge of the present moment, which is so unique, so utterly different from the vague shifting mists of the past and the future. This present which is unprecedented, which is ever new. And this present in which lie all the seeds for every possible future. And in this present, in which the truth manifests, in which awakening can occur at any moment, and in this present, in which the ending of suffering becomes a reality. So this is my little talk for you this evening on presence. And I offer this for your reflection, and I'd like to invite if there's any comments or questions.
What's the difference between dreams and reality?
Difference between dreams and reality? Well, I think dreams are a form of reality. I mean, dreams are real, right? So they actually happen. But as a form of reality, they're a form of reality that's, I think, characterized by a mind which has less checks and restraints than the mind normally does. Normally, the reality we operate from inside is always being, if you like, disciplined by the external world. We see things, hear things, and so on. And it's giving us some information which is constantly bringing us back to this so-called reality that we're in. Whereas in dreams those things are much more distant and the mind is more free to invent whatever it wants. I don't know if that answers your question or not. Okay, so let's finish up by paying respect.